Blog Talk Radio.
Tell my baby naked hot. Ride the cock till you hit the spot. Tell my baby naked hot.
Doing the doggy style. Wow, 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 yippee yo, yippee yay, bow, wow, yippee yo, yippee. Wow, 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 yippee yo, yippee yay, bow, wow, yippee yo, yippee.
And welcome to, I guess, another edition of Naked Soma's Eye Contact Radio Hour. I'm going to punch up Professor Val because I am in the catbird seat tonight. Are you there?
I am.
Oh.
That's a nice greeting.
Yeah, please, believe me. We're going to do an hour of this, and hopefully you'll hear it. We're very disgusted with the quality of our archives. I don't know the stats for last week. I think we had less than 50 people archive the show. I don't even know what the final total was. It was about 40 last time I looked. And, you know, I did a thorough investigation of the Blog Talk universe the last two or three nights, early mornings that I've spent here. At the Soma Space,
uh-huh.
And it seems to me that the shows that get the highest ratings are the ones people can hear. So we didn't get too much of an explanation or really kind of a clue.
Well, it was our fault, according to them.
Well, yeah, it's our phone company or our phone or the carrier signal or like five things that we can't do anything about. That would cause the archives to sound like I'm talking out of a spider hole.
Yes,
so,
actually.
You know, if there's anyone listening that would like to text us at our AIM account, you can go over to, actually, you can go over to nakedsoma.com, otherwise known as somaspace.org, and click on our AIM account there and text over to Professor Val if you can hear us okay.
Right.
I'd love to get some confirmation. Is Rex around for that service, or is that...
He is actually. Actually, did we want to talk to him about what happened tonight?
Rex?
Yeah, we had a little. Yeah, Rex and I had a little interesting thing that happened at the restaurant. Grab a phone.
Oh.
There's one up there. Hold on a second. We have to locate. You know, we have phones all over the place.
Yes.
Yes, actually.
More carrier signals. Block talk to Barry.
That's right. All right, click in.
You rang.
There he is. The aforementioned Rexo.
That's right.
Good evening.
So we went out to dinner. You want to tell him what happened?
Yeah, what's that place we were in?
Ruby Tuesdays.
All right. So I ordered a Parmesan shrimp pasta dish and the salad bar, and Val got a burger with fries and onion rings.
Mm.
So the girl who brought the stuff was not the girl who took the order. And without really asking, the girl put the burger in front of me and put the pasta in front of Val.
Gender typing with the
so
food.
So we told her, no, that's not how it goes. And I said, was that sexist what she just did? And I said, I think I lost my balls a little bit just now for what I ordered for dinner. So...
shrimp or beef? I don't know.
I feel like a little bit less of a man now because of my
choice
of dinner.
Did the woman react? Cover her tracks a little bit or?
No,
she just swapped the dishes and I don't know. She just it just struck me as odd.
She's just a dopey Philo.
Yeah, well, this is you got to realize that you play the percentages there. I mean, if you're bringing that those two plates over to a couple. Probably on the order of 8 out of 10 times, it's going to go burger to the guy and shrimp to the girl. But you know, this is one of those things. It's I was reading about it this morning. There's a lot of ideas that we have in our heads that we're not even aware of, and they kind of steer your behavior. So
yes,
playing the percentages. That's pretty. What was the dinner? You guys both enjoyed the meal?
Yeah. All right.
Yeah, it was good.
It's Ruby Tuesday. Come on.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that does show that there is a, sort of a little feeder system out there in the universe. You sit there and I've had that happen to me when I ordered soup once and everyone else got like a diner and they gave the soup to the girl. I said that's my damn soup, and I got looked at like I'd thrown the bounds of the universe off or something.
Like you ordered a watercress sandwich.
Yes, something like that. Well, next time you go to Ruby Tuesday, make sure you wear like a blue shirt or something.
Well, I do feel like I was sexually discriminated against, but on the way out, I pointed out to Val how nice the other waitress's ass was, so I figure it's okay.
Oh, my
there
God. She had.
I settled,
oh,
really?
I settled Applebus? The accounts. Oh, it was fantastic.
Oh, it was
she was way too young for me to be looking at, too. But
a gastronomic delight over there at Ruby Tuesdays. Located
yeah,
on, what was that, on 22 in Brewster?
No, that's actually the one in Danbury there.
Oh, you were down in Danbury. Okay.
Yes,
well, off 84, just off I-84, you can get a good burger, some shrimp, and see a nice Ash. She's appearing tonight over there at Ruby Tuesdays in Danbury, Connecticut.
Hey,
Ruxo, thanks for joining us and updating us on the male bias that's out there. I know it's
unbelievable.
There.
Unbelievable.
Mm-hmm.
White
man's
burden continues. Take it easy, man.
Punching out. Good night.
We were so pissed off. I don't know. I mean, there's just something so... about that.
I'm more interested about this woman's butt now, but that's all the whole show.
Yeah, of course. But I still don't understand how shrimp is more feminine than masculine.
Well, there's a million reasons. I mean, quiche, the whole thing. I mean,
well,
look at this way. I was mentioning a little bit. We're going to talk about this a little more now because we're going to get into this before our guest gets on here. In terms of the way people characterize behavior as masculine versus feminine and male and female.
That's right.
And the whole thing of having a biological marker for something and having a sociological way of characterizing things. And, I'm a caregiver. You know, I'm a doctor. So it's like in if you're looking at it in terms of behavior, it's a nurturing behavior. You have the authoritative role, but you're supposed to be a nurturing type of person to get into the healing arts. And so... you know, that's looked at in the culture as being more what a maternal thing, more of a feminine behavior. So it doesn't mean that the guy is effeminate. It means that he has both sides of the coin covered, and he can do both things. He could nurture and he could protect. So with the food, it's the same thing. The foods get profiled that way. Everything gets characterized that way, but they do it without understanding the adjective versus the noun. It's like, okay... like we talked about last week a little bit with autism, it's like that has markers for it, like asthma and things like that. But when you say it's autistic or asthmatic or somatic, it's
of
the nature of. It's not exactly. It's similar to it, but it's not exactly. So that's what happened to old Rexo there. The chick's walking there with the two dishes, and she says, well, 9 times out of 10, I give the beef to the dude, and I give the fish to the chick.
Uh-huh.
It's the way it flies on this planet. We're very predictable that way.
Yep.
No?
Yes.
So I want to get there. We went over to College of New Rochelle yesterday, and we had our firsthand little feedback on the S-List book.
Yeah.
Which you can get over there now at nakedsoma.com. Go over there because I love saying that now because we're there.
Yeah,
And you can check it out because the thing is that we really want to steer the show more towards teaching you guys how to profile things using that S list and talking about these celebrities that are in there. There's 100 of them in there that are profiled for you to use this language that you can orient yourself and understand that the images and all the things you're bombarded with from the outside world that are conditioning you, just like this waitress was conditioned to give old Rex there the old sandwich, is filtered through outside of your conscious awareness for the most part, and you're being pushed and pulled by a lot of things that you're not even catching firsthand. So the S-List book is there to download for free. We're going to start steering the show more toward the principles that are in there, how you relate to images and how those things guide behavior and how those things can actually change the way your brain operates, change the way you're functioning, and influence your performance out there in the world.
That's
so,
right.
You know. We'll be getting ankle deep in that here in a minute with our guest, David Goodman.
Shall I go fetch him?
Why don't you go fetch him, and I will play several of my choice little files.
And
here.
I had another one for you, but I forgot to upload it to damn Eco. All right, I'll be back in a minute.
All right. All right, so the number again is 646-478-4847. If you want to get on the show and speak to our guest here in a minute, we're going to be talking about the... mass lobotomy, that the country has been going in the last 20, 30 years since Prozac hit the market, and looking at brain function and what's been missing from education, what's been missing from healthcare. We have a very astute guest that's going to be taking us pretty deep into the forest on this and letting us see what's been going on behind the curtain. So this is going to be one of those ones where you're going to want to listen to it once or twice and go, what did he say? Did he really say that? You know, so along those lines, I will give you a little Charlie here to get us started.
Yeah, Charlie, Candy Mountain, it's a land of sweets and joy and joyness.
Please stop bouncing on.
There you go, Charlie's back. And just to kind of give you a bridge on that, is that anytime we start talking about the drug culture, it's really kind of redundant because you're in the United States, you're in the Western Hemisphere, you're in that world that is constantly trying to oppose basically every human suffering, everything that goes on, and put a blockade on it and not experience it, push it away. Where do you think it all goes? I love when someone tells me, my headache went away. Where did it go? Where did it come from? And what are you going to do in the meantime, since it came out of nowhere and it went into nowhere?
You say that to me all the time.
I love that. That language makes me so mad. So anyway, I think we're all set with David?
We are.
All right. So joining us now from an undisclosed location in Southern California is Dr. David Goodman. Welcome to Naked Soma, David.
Oh, delighted to be there.
You'd be there. Yeah, you're here with us.
You should be here. It's hot and miserable, I'll tell you.
Well, I'm in Escondido, which is about 35 miles north of San Diego, so it's mostly nice here 12 months a year.
Wow.
Wow.
I wonder what that's like. I mean, we go from freezing our asses off to boiling our you-know-whats off.
Yeah, we're in a soup today. I just went outside for a little while, and it's like basically like a giant sponge with Los Angeles type air quality. So,
poor baby.
Welcome
yeah.
to
delighted
welcome
to be
York.
Here. Delighted
yeah,
to be
well,
here. I guess.
Well, the outside of the global climate change we're going on, we have a lot of things to cover here tonight about your history and your insights about what we did. To harm human nature in the last 50 or 60 years, and to some degree and extent, made it sort of a generational cycle where every time we go through another layer, we seem to get further off course. So why don't you bring us back to, let's say, where neuroscience was 1955, 1960, and what your track was through it, and where you thought it was going, and then where it went.
Well, actually, neuroscience wasn't coined until 1968.
Oh,
so
okay.
The number of neuroscientists at the first convention was filled a very small auditorium. It was less than 1,000 people. The professional society has grown at least 40-fold since then. But when I first began to go into the field of brain and behavior in 1960, there were two directions it could have gone. One was what we now call chronomics, or chronobiology, or biological rhythms, which is astoundingly important and underplayed in the major science publications. The other way, which was much more profitable, because you could sell a piece of plastic with chemical inside that costs you 2 cents for $20 or whatever, was the pharmaceutical. And there was absolutely no bias at the time, because the market for drugs was essentially for people who were psychotic, for treating a mental illness. So we're talking about ostensibly a very small market. Around 1964, 65, we all had to choose whether we were going to join the drug revolution. It was called the revolution in green, and that was sort of the insider description of it. And ostensibly, it was to legalize marijuana, or at least to encourage adolescents to smoke marijuana in defiance of their parents, the idea being that they were all right-brained, and they were creative and artistic and independent, and their parents were in consciousness, too, or whatever, and they were, more primitive consciousness, and they lived according to rules and strict religion and so on. So the breakout within the first 10 years was to put 3 out of 10 kids, essentially, or even more than that, on a rather low-grade marijuana that was popular, say, back around 1970. The amount of children who ever used a narcotic, and I'm talking about high school kids, in 1960 was 1 in 30,000, which is comparable to the use of drugs now in Outer Mongolia.
Wow.
Oh, jeez.
So that whoever went to high school, I was the editor of one of the 2 yearbooks in my high school, say around 1957, if there was a single student who used any kind of drug, it would be gossip for a week or more, because I had spies, you know, getting quotes for the yearbook. And, you know, Joe Jones drank his father's whiskey in the barn or whatever, and, you know, Mary smoked. But when it came to marijuana, it was like, you know, you find that in Harlem or New Orleans or Hollywood. It's not something that any child would spend a nickel for. It was illegal. I think I sent you an email, and I mentioned that the word narcotic is utterly phenomenal. The FBI called all the illegal drugs narcotics.
Mm-hmm.
But obviously amphetamines and cocaine do anything else but narcotize you, which
mm-hmm.
means to put you to sleep. They're in very potent stimulants.
Mm-hmm.
So I went back to the FBI files of the 1930s. And it turned out that they narcotized, they put to sleep higher nervous system activity development in teenagers. The belief was when they started using narcotics that their brain would stop growing and that their emotional and intellectual growth would diminish or stop or reverse, retrograde, so that they were able to wet blanket use of all of these drugs. Anyway, to answer your question, the use of drugs is exploded, the pharmaceuticals obviously, and Associated Press, and not some freaky deaky off the wall, has reported a 40-fold increase in mental illness drugs for children. You've read about the use of the intended use of statins, cholesterol-lowering drugs, in children as young as 8 years old. When, of course, cholesterol is about 18% of the typical neuron, and is the primary molecule for the development of all the sex and steroid hormones. So I can't imagine anything more ridiculous. So I mean, I could go on and on, but. What I think is we finally got to a point where we're taking common drugs called antidepressants that actually are lobotomy drugs. And I think this is well be called a system for knocking out the right prefrontal lobe. And I was been studying all this this week in preparation for this interview.
Mm-hmm.
So if you have any questions, that's essentially my...
One of the stats that came up this week in my preparation, if you want to call it that, a thorough search of about 5 things on my RSS feeder, is that this stat on pre-dementia that it came out a couple of days ago, is that it says 1 million older Americans slide from normal memory into mild impairment each year, and on top of the 500,000 have full-blown Alzheimer's, and this is starting to affect the boomer generation rolling back to about 62 years old. And this is they say it's a burgeoning problem. This is a Mayo Clinic guy. He says, we're facing a crisis. Well, no kidding. And so you're saying that a lot of this stuff, this impairment we're seeing, especially on the mental side, is from 20, 30, 40 years of basically pickling all these things with these really, you know, damaging drugs. And now you're seeing the ramifications a generation or so later.
Well, I'm just a couple of things I could say that are very pithy. Number one, I went to medical school for a year at the University of Chicago and decided I'd rather get a PhD. But the neurology book I studied from, when they're talking about neurological disorders, there was no entry on Alzheimer's disease. This was about 1962. It was a footnote, and it wasn't even the number one footnote for an obscure mental disease. Number one was Pick's disease in the footnote, as I remember, and number two was Alzheimer's. So obviously, if we weren't a lobotomized society, we would want to know what's the cause of Alzheimer's. It's not just simply getting old. I mean, that's ridiculous. The books on the centenarians, you know, the Andes and the Himalayas and the Caucasus, they're over 100 years old, and they don't have Alzheimer's. They worked hard, and they haven't been, at least until recently, damaged by the toxic environment that we grow up in. The other point is I've been reading Joseph Glenmullen's book about the antidepressant solution. And when people cut their drug of Paxil, say, SSRI, and there are many of them, there are 12 of them, from 20 to 10 milligrams, he has a checklist of what symptoms they experience. It's just reducing the drug. It's not going off the drug cold turkey.
Right.
And he lists 58 different symptoms. Eight of them are related to depression and suicidal thoughts, six to irritability and aggression, five to sensory aberrations, five to dizziness, two to nightmares, three to mania, two to forgetfulness, amnesia, two to panic, headache, tremor, malaise, six with flu symptoms, five with GI upset, one with chest pain, twitch, cramping, jittery, drooling, blurred vision, slurred speech, restless legs. You tell me if that isn't a devastatingly powerful drug.
Yeah, sign me up.
I mean, those things are always given out in those tiny little print, you know, little, know your drug, like almost like they hand it out as if it's insignificant. And these are, you know, like you're saying, these are pretty disruptive side effects. I don't know how you can characterize them as side effects. It was basically, you should stick the poison label on the sucker and say, keep it away from anyone that has a heartbeat and a smile, because it doesn't sound like it's doing, even if it's suppressing the so-called problem, it's giving you seven or eight other ones that are going to be managed by other drugs.
Well, what I read last, I separated from the neurological disease, because it's just fascinating. Six different categories of flu symptoms. What does that tell you about Paxil? It means it's activating the immune system, which has nothing to do with the brain. Five GI upsets. Obviously, the gastrointestinal tract is a primary site. One chest pain. It means lungs and heart are a primary target of SSRIs. In fact, the minority, by far, of serotonin receptor sites, and there are many, many of them, not just one, are in the brain. The rest are in the cardiovascular and the GI system. And the immune system.
Was most of the research on that? I'm sorry, I just interrupted. But everyone started popping melatonin about 10 years ago. And then they said, oh, you know what? It's a neuromodulator of the gut. And so everyone that was taking the serotonin problems ended up on the melatonin supplement, the holistic types. And you're saying this is a vicious cycle.
Well, it's not only a vicious cycle, but when I go to a hospital, I talk to the pharmacist. I say, what's the maximum number of drugs that you give to a person to treat the side effects of the primary drug? And the record was 21.
Wow.
Recently, I heard of a case from a friend of mine where his father was on 29 different drugs simultaneously.
Oh, his poor liver.
Well, you see, these drugs are not tested in combination. They're tested individually, often for about 45 days on let's say, males primarily, who happen to be middle-aged. And yet the drugs are given to toddlers and infants and given to people. My father's 96 years old. I'm not able to keep him off all drugs. But We are living like we're lobotomized. I wouldn't be surprised if many of our leaders, I put that in quotes, are on multiple drugs that deplete anterior pole and right prefrontal activity. When I'm an unmarried man, I never married, but if I go on a date with a woman, I can tell across the room if she's on Prozac. I get calls from mothers whose daughters have been put on Paxil or more Paxil than Prozac. Would you like to hear what some of the blocked function is? Mm. The right prefrontal lobe keeps you from overeating. In the lobotomy literature, damage to the right prefrontal lobe will cause an increase in weight of 20 pounds. So what is the average increase in weight in Americans in the last 40 years since drugs have been rampaging?
Mm-hmm.
Wouldn't you think it was about 20 pounds?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, 30% of people are supposed to be have a BMI of 30 or more, which to me is at least 15 pounds obese. People on Paxil are not empathic. They're remarkably self-centered. There's a center in the right prefrontal lobe that relates to being fair-minded and equitable. Blocking that will cause you to be greedy and grabby. The right prefrontal lobe teaches caution. So people who are incautious and risk-taking would have damage to the right prefrontal lobe. I studied with Ward Halstead, one of the inventors of the Halstead right-hand test at the University of Chicago. And we checked out all this stuff. We actually saw lobotomy patients who showed these symptoms. The single perspective, the ego-centeredness, is very typical of Paxil users. And really the bonanza, if you look at the five stages of neurological development, the salvation for the growth for a neurological growth requires crossing from the left dominant left side of the left cortex to the, especially the frontal cortex, to the right side of the brain. Now, how do you get there? You get there through emotional outbursts or like near-death experiences. Dr. E. Michael Holden and I, a neurologist, we did an investigation, and we found that the best way to reside, at least temporarily, in the right side of the brain was through intense orgasm, agonized crying, and laughing jags. And what we got a big kick out of is that children and sexy women sometimes show all three of these sequentially and sometimes almost simultaneously.
Jeez.
So what Paxil does is it blocks the weeping reflex. Paxil blocks the orgasmic response. You talk about multiple drugs. The original report was that about 7% of the people on Prozac have sexual problems. The last figure is 74% that I saw on the internet. So we have a tenfold reported increase in sexual problems, which relates to sexual arousal and orgasm. Now, suppose I, as a small businessman, created a drug that blocked the orgasmic reflex in a woman and a man's brain. Do you think it would be 120 point headlines in the New York Post about what a rat I am? And probably the Attorney General of the state of New York would investigate me.
Yeah.
So to me, the whole decision not to join the drug revolution has gotten me excluded, so I can talk like this on the air. If I'd stayed with the drug company that I originally worked for, I'd probably be making about $300,000 a year now, and I'd have connections all over the world. I'd go to all the conferences. So we're so lobotomized that we pay the people well who damage other people and don't do the same for people who have empathy and altruism and caring for others.
Well, I mean, this is one of the things that you know, your work's always fascinated me. It's very, what the solutions that you're recommending are so simple and fundamental and sort of basic to nurturing these things along, and the interventions that are opposing that are, yeah, they're corrosive. I guess what I want to know is what you're suggesting is that in full light of day, the powers that be consciously and literally and intentionally, almost in a sinister way, planned all this. It wasn't willy-nilly. It wasn't, oh, we'll just throw a drug out of the market and see if we get the LD, you know, dose, you know, over 50 and, okay, whatever, that drug is safe. Because the FDA's always put that agenda out that they're so strict about letting a drug on the market. But you're saying that there's an avalanche, almost like a waterfall, of this corrosive chemistry, you know, running through the veins of the country, and people's lives are being seriously threatened from early ages. From when we mentioned autism at the top of the show, and the way that community's been basically pickled too. So are you suggesting that that's the case, that the powers that be, whether it's CDC, FDA, NIH, any other three-letter word you want to put in there, had this as an objective, or was it something that they looked at as an acceptable loss?
Oh, no. The idea of lobotomizing the American people appears in papers from noted psychiatrists between 64 and 68. They called it the Green Revolution.
Okay.
That we intellectuals worried too much about our self-image and about the future of society and things like that. We'd be much better off smoking moderate marijuana that was available then. I mean, I don't want to get into all the intricate details. I want to turn this argument on its ear.
Okay.
The fact is that there are five stages in neurological development, according to, if I update Halstead.
Mm-hmm.
And if I were a professor at the New York University, for example, where I got my bachelor's degree, I'd only be allowed to use two of those levels. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Yeah.
That if I went to level 3, 4, or 5, I'd be laid off for 100 different reasons.
Right. So there's no.
So what we have are left frontal students, who read Parade magazine every Sunday and believe that's reality. And you got the professors using the left prefrontal lobe. But you as a professor go into your weeping orgasm, laughing mode or whatever. You get into your right prefrontal and you worry about, character and development and things like that. And especially if you want to control your own future to using the anterior pole or the frontal polar area 10, you're finished. Because the university depends on government subsidy, and it depends on corporate technology transfer and development. You don't want to rock the boat. You don't want people like me on this radio. In fact, there's probably somebody listening to this, because this is going to bounce around the internet for years, who's going to want to check my income tax filings, because they won't appear on stage. I mean, that's zero probability that any psychiatrists would debate me what I just said today, and I said several things about neurological development, the dynamic nature of the serotonin dopamine network, and so on, the effects of Paxil, the right lobotomy, the fact that the SSRIs act on 100 other major targets of the body in addition to the brain, and on and on. Have you ever heard any of this? Have you read any of this in Parade magazine?
Actually, if anyone's listening from Merck, you can call up here, 646-478-4847. I'm sure David's got some choice words for you, because it just sounds like, just for the benefit of the audience, maybe they tuned in late, just list 1 to 5 these stages in neurological development so people can have that kind of in their left brain tomorrow morning when they go, I listened to this weird show, this guy said, we're getting screwed here. So what's the 5 stages, 1 to 5?
Well, of course, assuming that you get to the cortex, there's people run by the limbic system in the brain set, but I said left frontal is, a nice boy growing up like I was in New York, around 15, 16-year-olds, who reads the newspaper and believes that that's reality.
Okay.
Then the left prefrontal lobe, becoming a professional, becoming very task-oriented, establishing a career, being strategically organized, being able to follow the power structure and be one of the boys. The third is to outgrow this power need, this money for great, this thrust for great wealth, and to go across the corpus callosum in other ways, from the left brain to the right brain, and experience the next stage of development, which is essentially the field of dopamine in the right hemisphere. Beyond that, you can be dominated by the right prefrontal lobe, where you have your emotional intelligence, social intelligence, spiritual intelligence, and innovative intelligence. How do you like that? That's all in the right side of the brain that's excluded at New York University. And I've gone to...
I'm on the list, yeah.
I've gone to Chicago University, I've gone to UC Irvine, I've been to top 50 schools, and they keep saying, well, that's religion, we don't want to teach character development in the schools, and this is all spiritual garbage, and it's off the wall, and it's fringe, and all that stuff. And the ultimate, and I'm writing a book about this, and in fact I just sent it off to the agent, which is called Hidden Neurology, in a short title. The frontal pole, the anterior pole, only in the last 10 years have we realized that they were right in the 50s, that the brain develops in a more or less in a caudal anterior manner, that the part of the brain right behind the forehead enables you to set 10 and 20 year plans that are independent of all the social pressures that you'll experience, you know, a la Da Vinci, a la Jesus, a la Darwin, a la Mendel. I mean, just Einstein. None of these people had academic affiliations. None of these people had graduate students. None of these people had secretaries. They were real scientists who could access their human genius, and that's my title for people who can access all five of those neurological development phases, so that if you only develop the one phase, you can say you're using 20% of your brain, literally.
You know, we're talking about
frontopolar people can arbitrarily access any of the lower systems at will.
That's the fact.
What we've got is an enormous amount of publicity that, you know, the left brain things are great, you know, it's where your ego is and where your defense mechanism is, and this is where all your accomplishment is. But to me, this is silliness, because it's where we were in the 60s and 70s when they stopped neurological development and told us we only had a right brain and a left brain. Where are the frontal lobes? Where are the prefrontal lobes? Where are the anterior pole? You know, to tell an intelligent people that you just have a right brain that loves dope and a left brain that goes to church on Sunday is a simplification worthy of some minor country in the middle of Africa. You know, this is not what you expect in a highly developed Western nation like ours. But, I mean, they're more intelligent. They're more cunning than we are. I mean, they could figure out, you know, what to put in Parade magazine every Sunday and what to put on PBS to mislead us. You know, it's all Joseph Campbell myth-making as far as I'm concerned.
Mm-hmm. Well, so, I mean, this is one of the things about the social brain as compared to the biological brain is that if enough people around you are reinforcing the belief, even though it feels weird and it's not, you sort of, there's a herd mentality with this. And where you, like you say, hidden neurology, this is buried neurology to me, because nobody talks about the brain in its full context anymore. They talk about it in terms of dysfunction more than they talk about potential and higher function. Like one of the emails they sent me this afternoon was about the real reason they called high school was supposed to be about these higher psychomotor skills and developing an adolescent. And now the GED and all that, it's like basically a... it's almost like a throwaway. The education stops, to me, almost at age six. You know, everything after that is downhill. They don't have concrete learning anymore.
Well, there's a nice, I'm sure you subscribe, there's a nice peer-reviewed journal called New Paradigm in Australia. And I've been writing a whole series of articles about how adolescents can bypass all this nonsense. The first one was called The Dream of Jeremiah, and I'll go to Goodman, Dream of Jeremiah, New Paradigm.
I actually have that on my screen right now.
There you go. Where I point out that the original purpose of the religion of Jesus, the early, what we call Christianity now, was for the male warrior to transform into a woman's mind, a young woman's mind. And if you look at the book of Hebrews, and the first earliest Christians, these 20 characteristics of an early Christian, 18 of them are typical of young women as opposed to warrior males. So it's a major neurological revolution. The one I'm just finishing now is on Consciousness 4. Remember Charles A. Reich wrote about drugs and Consciousness 3?
Yeah, okay,
so
sure.
It's a matter of organized inquiry among teenagers, challenging their adults, their patriarchs in the various institutions, and challenging them in a very systematic way with, you know, one child playing the role of serotonin and one playing dopamine and one playing acetylcholine and one playing norepinephrine or whatever name they want to use, to show that there are four normal, natural ways of acting, thinking, perceiving, behaving, forecasting in our brains.
We'll buy that.
You know, for example, you know, having studied, as you know, 32,000 dreams,
right?
I haven't found a dream from anybody who says they're depressed in the dream.
No.
They're scared, they're anxious, they're confused, they're terrified. So they call that a nightmare. Well, maybe what's called a nightmare is just an anticipation of the worst possible future, the worst case scenario, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
So why this belief that one out of five kids is mentally ill, and they include in this the teachers? And I mean, for God's sakes, you know, I showed some cyclothymic, you know, mild bipolar kind of stuff, and there's somatic ways of dealing with that. I got an email from Val that talked about the meditation, among other things.
Mm-hmm.
Why in the world charge a person $213 a month for some crummy drug when meditation, you could do it for nothing, right?
That's right.
It doesn't cost anything.
Well, if you fear the symptom, and we were talking about yesterday where her grad students are going to be in a counseling environment pretty soon, no matter what emotion you take to any extreme, it creates instability, and the allopathic mainstream way of dealing with that is always to oppose it. And so if it's fear, you know, they give you medication so that you're basically numb to the fear or the phobia. If it's anger, then, oh, it's sensitivity training. If it's worry or anxiety, then they'll knock you out with something else, you know, to make you sleep. So they're constantly trying to keep you in a box, say a scale of 1 to 10. They try to keep you between 4 and 6 because, God forbid, you have an emotion that they can't manage. And so it's generally just about that dread that you're acting up. You're acting, you know, like you're saying, full functioning, where there's a presence of both sides of the coin here, where it isn't just about, you know, keeping your trunk on the tail of the elephant in front of you.
Oh, I could talk till 3 a.m. You'd probably all fall asleep.
No, I'm just saying. You watched the whole thing go up the chute, and where we could have done it in a correct way. How much do you think this was influenced by the Cold War, by other governments, by the whole idea of controlling populations? Because when you go back, you know, in that era in the 60s, you had the Cold War going on, you had Vietnam going on. There was a big reason to keep society in check if you're the government, because there was so much unrest. So how much do you think it was politically tainted as far as the way that they went about making this change of direction, the way they were going with NIH and some other things you were talking about?
Well, I think with my own experience, it's absolutely perfect. I haven't told this even to friends, and yet I'm putting it on the Internet now. I happen to be the inventor of the first crude body scanner, and I realized that, you know, I sold my rights to the university for a dollar and all that. So I assumed that I'd never have to worry again about employment, being a much younger man and having that on my resume and publishing that in Nature magazine, like Watson and Crick published in Nature and all this nice stuff. And then my faculty started getting my ear. I remember vividly, I was told by one of my faculty members that I have to leave the country because there's no room for geniuses in this country. And when I balked, I was offered, again, this is not what everybody puts on the Internet, I was offered a 10-year grant to do my work and stay out of people's hair, as long as it wasn't in this country.
Oh my God.
And they actually found me some pretty good places. When I put out a series of books on the varieties of brain damage in children, and that are related to different drugs like alcohol and marijuana and powerful marijuana and so on, the academic system did everything short of putting me out on a raft in the middle of the ocean to stop me from educating people. Everything, again, from extremes, from throwing all my advertising in the wastebasket in front of me at a police station here in North County, California, to buying out all my inventory, every single book I had in inventory by the University of California. They just bought it all out and then buried it. So I don't know. We're invading countries right and left and imposing American-style democracy. What is that? You know, all I'm asking for, and I think we were on the same chat line or whatever about this. All I've asked is it's a debate. You know, Mr. Shapiro, who's making $350,000 a year as a psychiatrist, as I would have if I'd stayed in medical school. I think that's democratic. But yet they have nothing to gain because they're dictatorial, of course. And anytime you're talking about the military, and I think that's the question you asked, you're utterly emphasizing the less competitive, militant, aggressive, task-oriented, planned future for other people. It's a very dominant patriarchic part of the brain. And, you know, I'm, 5'7" and 155 pounds. Who am I to fight with some militant brute who says, you know, you just lost your tenure by writing that article or appearing on the internet radio, you know?
I think that inhibits a lot of people from being just even curious about some of these things if they think that their livelihood or their sense of security is threatened by even just scratching the surface of the things that you've uncovered. Who knows how many people are out there now that have stumbled upon similar things that you stumbled upon and put two and two together and then went, I can't tell anybody. This would lead to the end of my comfortable little life here.
You're 100% right. I mean, people warned me about doing this, what I'm doing right now. You know,
Just full disclosure, David and I have been weaving peripherally in and out of an organization that got involved with the study of chaos theory. Last 15 or 20 years, and just the listserv alone is militantly supervised by university tenured professors that don't want anybody rocking the boat or giving anybody any information that would suggest that maybe these universities are not really doing true science, that they're doing kind of what you're saying. They're just filling up the bucket of the same old stuff and keeping people on a path that doesn't allow them to look left or right from wherever the direction that the sled is pointing. We're not immune to it.
I'm telling you. I mean, I've heard that I sold a fantastic book to a major publisher for hundreds of thousands of dollars, and another one I was told they wanted to give me $750,000, and somebody picks up the phone and says that I'm an epileptic or I'm a paranoid schizophrenic or I'm a traitor. I mean, they just pick up some beautiful adjective that sounds awful. But have you heard any signs of mental disorder?
No, but you're far from the herd as far as what comes through my door on a daily basis. I mean,
unless logic is mental illness, I don't know.
Somebody yesterday said to me that, I said, what should I introduce myself as? I'm a defrocked neuroscientist. I never allowed to talk to any students about the brain. At least in college, I can probably give a talk at a high school or whatever. What should I call myself, a futurist? He said, well, you're like in the Fountainhead, that great architect. He didn't know that Robert Rourke, I guess his name was, or something. John, whatever. But Rourke, he said, you just go your own route. And this causes the temples of power to collapse on you like Samson, What are they afraid of, a little 69-year-old man who's 5'7" and a half, weighs 153 pounds, wouldn't hurt a flea? What temple could I possibly shake with the truth?
Again, this is one of those things where it's sort of, the race isn't, the bat's taken out of your hands, because if they gave you a fair shot, you'd knock it out of the park. So you don't get the chance at bat, because in a very similar parallel universe to me, in my little community of chiropractic, I mean, I actually said, out of all the things I put together, because they made me write a white paper to sort of almost like a a dissertation that doesn't get you a PhD in chiropractic. They go, you know what? You got a lot of radical ideas. Why don't you see if you can get it published? I said, okay. So
there
I wrote the
go.
Paper, and a 57-page paper that they, you know, they choked the poor editor in 180 references. It was a lot of stuff. And I said, you know what? There's a lot of research about interpersonal neurobiology and the fact and entrainment, all the stuff I'd learned from the Chaos guys a little bit. And I say, I think we're kind of off-center in the way we look at things structurally. I think there's a functional component here and that there's a dynamic here that the environment's influencing. Maybe we're sharing this interference as a survival strategy, but survival's local and evolution is systemic. I said, we got to start talking about these things as being, you know, almost communicating like memes, like the way I hold my body, you hold your body that way, and it helps me survive, but maybe it weakens you, and oh my God, did I get thrown out of church quick. And
you
know, and that because if you say something that doesn't have that government cheese, you know, stable stamp on it, you're going to be branded as a radical. And unfortunately, you know, it's sad because when it's all said and done, you know, 20, 30, 40 years from now, after that whole thing's run its course, and you know, they have predictions on here that said by 2030 every American's going to be obese, you know, we're all going to be it's going to be too late. It's going to be, you're going to be looking at, there's going to be nobody left to oppose it. You know, everybody's going to be flat on their back. So I don't really get worried about, you know, the end of the world anymore. I think it's sort of like, you got to figure out how do you start the new one.
Well, I think that's a wonderful segue because I made a list of people who think like I do, and probably maybe some much more articulate than I am. You know, like Joseph Glenmullen, I mentioned. You know, Prozac backlash, antidepressant solution. Peter Bregan has been talking like me for 20 years. That's Breggin. Marcia Angell, of course. The truth about drug companies, and Melody Peterson is extraordinarily competent. You know, our daily meds. There's a tipping point coming before 20 years when everybody's obese. You know, I think we can only go so far. Fortunately, as you well know, I read prodigiously about what happened to the Soviet society from 1919 on and what happened to German society from 1933 on. I have a lot of interest. And you know, the Politburo can just go so long, and then the whole system just collapsed. The same thing in World War II with the German system. So all unshakable systems eventually come to an end. That's the cycle. You know, you've written about the entrainment and cyclicity and all that nice stuff. You know, if anybody wants to continue the conversation, I can give them an email. I can tell them, you know, what to look up on the internet under Google. If it's Salamand, you know, the beginning of Salamander 04, Salamand04@yahoo.com. I'll be glad to chat with people who are listening.
Okay.
Great.
And the field that makes biopharm almost a child's play is the biochron, and if they look at mental chronomics on Google and they look at monthly emotional rhythm and my name, they'll find 10 or 15 articles. The best one I wrote, the one I'm most proud of, is about Rexford Hersey, the founder of this field of masculine monthly mood cycles, which is my specialty. If they go to Google and they type in Hersey, H-E-R-S-E-Y, my name and the new paradigm in quotes, I think they'll get a good read about what the implications are of the fact that all men are manic depressive, if you want to use that word. All men are cyclothymic. All men are bipolar. In 30 years, I have never found a man who said, I always have the same mood. And I'm not making that up. So how could you call what was normal and called moodiness in 1974? In 1975, a book called Mood Swing came out by Joseph Fever. I believe that's his name. And suddenly, everybody who was normal the previous year had to go on the miracle drug lithium now. And, you know, lithium should be called a kidney destroyer. That's a more proper title for it.
Well, lithium preceded, you know, was one of the ones that came before Prozac, and it was the one that I saw when I first got into practice. I was still seeing people weaning off of lithium after 10 or 15 years, and they were pickled, and then they stuck those people on Prozac when they came off the lithium. being someone who is trying to do his little noble servant, noble savage job, doing the body work and stuff for 17 years, and having people crawl in the door, you know, with Frappuccino in one hand, pack of cigarettes in their pocket, and a fistful of pills, and then they go, "Oh, what supplement do I take?" "Oh, geez, I don't know what you got for that one there, Rex," but I just said Rex, but it just seems like the better living through chemistry theme has gotten to the point where there's almost no way for the individual who's in that world, who's relying on their doctors for open advice, you know, that's coming with the spirit of full disclosure and all that stuff. It just seems like the ecology is, you've got to burrow under the rocks, and hopefully you get that hidden neurology book done soon so people can start understanding there's a way to build the brain back up, there's a way to rebuild your life back up, and it doesn't involve relying on, you know, the laboratories of Merck and their competitors, because they've proven to be abusers of humankind, not supporters. And that's why when you get into vaccines and you get into, you know, thimerosal and all the other stuff, and it just seems like it's just more of the same. So I really admire your work. I think you're brilliant. I think that people are just missing the boat when it comes to this stuff.
Yeah,
and it does take a sustained amount of attention. I don't know what he really has. Maybe we can just have it subliminally put in a summer blockbuster one of these years. And when they go to the movie theater, it subliminally says you're all being pickled, you know. And we can help them out. But it just seems like, for the most part, the battle's won knee-to-knee locally, and you have to create the momentum sort of from the bottom of the fractal tree up. And I don't know what we can do in this next couple of minutes to get that started, but I'll give you a shot.
Well, actually, the article I shipped off to New Paradigm about Consciousness 4, I think it's a good way to end this. H.G. Wells wrote about 150 books in his lifetime, and, you know, many of them were science fiction and forecast books. And after recommending, you know, like Airmen Lead the World, or, you know, great figures, you know, political figures, or great scientists should rule, they have conferences and coalitions and councils and all that stuff. In his last book, The Mind at the End of the Tether, which is an extremely negative book, but he's got one line in the whole book, and he says, there is hope for the future, and it's young people and their parents seeking life, and he puts life in italics. And I think that the new generation does not have to follow in the slimy footsteps of their predecessors. I really, really believe that. I don't believe that the teenagers are what I see on the checkout lines in the tabloids and the magazines. I think these are the same teenagers that in ages past were just like mature adults before they were 18 years old, that they've been infantilized now. You know, you worry about the bumps on your face, and you worry about the bumps you don't have on your chest and all that garbage. That's old, senile, patriarchal men in their 70s and 80s who are feeding a new generation junk information.
Mm-hmm.
And, I suggest there are ways for parents to bypass the schools and in the home and after-school clubs to actually organize their own inquiry and compare four ways to look at the world, because all the large corporations are now using four scenarios for the future, not just one.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if I said this right, but, you know, if I had an 18-year-old and that they were told that they were bipolar and were put on five drugs, I'd sue the school the next morning, because where's my second opinion?
Right.
Is this a democracy?
No, you have no recourse in the system. It's basically straight down the pipe, and then they sort them out later. Like we talk about all the time, 4% of the special needs kids ever make it to mainstream. They get put in an academic black hole, and they don't come out. So
yep,
the ones
yep.
that get through are functionally illiterate and pickled on meds. So it's
well, in a way, I've been there, done that, and
yeah.
I cannot compare the quality of life I have now with when I was 20 years old. You know.
Well, David, we've consumed the hour, so thanks for sharing so much information. Hopefully everyone can archive it, listen back, and get a hold of you directly. And thanks for joining us here on Naked.
All right, anytime. Stay happy. Stay happy.
Yep. We'll see you
happy.
Soon.
Sure, bye-bye.
And that's it.
My head, I be scratching while my thoughts are busy hatching if my movies had a brain. I'd unravel every riddle for any individual in trouble or in pain.
With the thoughts you'd be thinking, you could be a Luther Lincoln if you only had a brain.
Oh, I tell you why the ocean's near the shore. I could think of things I never thought before, and then I'd sit and think some more. I would not be just a nothing, my head all full of stuffing, my heart all full of pain. I would dance and be merry, life would be a ding-a-derry if I only had a brain.